My only opening comment would be that we plan to wrap up the agency presentation today. We don't have a work session scheduled for this budget at this time. That will come later. But we do expect to wrap up today.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to you all. Please identify yourself.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Trow.
When Sheila says later, what does she have any idea what that means and why we're not working this month?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, later would be sometime between now and the end of session. I don't have a direction yet or timing.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
There are issues still to be mushed about regarding the budget.
I'm sure there are, right. But we're not even starting to mush them yet. Okay.
Well, I think we are. I think there's, back on the heels of yesterday's discussion, a little, hopefully some interest in maybe ways to be, if there are more efficiencies, we certainly want to explore that. If there are ways to, my personal interest, to get back more of the beds that are forecast to be reduced in this budget, certainly looking at other funding sources to provide that opportunity. And
I think there's a lot of concern about this budget.
Oh, no question.
Membership across at least the.
I agree with you. I think that's what our effort is all about. We just have to locate the funding source or the shift in existing budgets. And one of the things, you know, we're looking at is how things are flowing through currently under last session's 555. Perhaps, you know, it shouldn't happen that way, and perhaps some of the money that's going to other purposes ought to be put into a program that we know works. I think it was interesting discussion yesterday about both maybe the questionable results at Deschutes County as well as the absolute lack of accountability. And to continue to fund that program, to me, makes no sense. So don't think we're not mooshing.
Sure.
Okay.
Senator Brown?
Mr. Chair, I just want to echo your concerns about the Deschutes County program. I think it's totally inappropriate, with all due respect to our former colleague, Senator Bryant, who I assume was the initiator of the program. I just think it's not okay for us to be spending this kind of money and having no kind of accountability for it. It's not okay.
I agree. And some of the mooshing, of course, that may go on is, I believe, one of the members of the Ways and Means leadership duo may be supportive of the current program. And
yes.
I have to visit with that individual. We'll see. So, that aside, we welcome you back. And
thank you. Karen Brazo, the director of the Youth Authority, and with me is yet another Karen Olson, who is our business services director, and she's going to report today.
You speak louder.
Yes.
You have a deaf person up here. I don't hear too well.
With me today is Karen Olson, who is our assistant director for business services, and she's going to present a section on administration and capital construction, or budgeting, I mean. So with that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I am Karen Olson, the Assistant Director for Business Services with the Oregon Youth Authority. I'm going to be starting on page 57 in your document with a presentation on administration. OYE administration provides leadership, program direction, and policy development, oversight, and centralized business services for the agency. Included in our responsibilities is the development and ongoing operation of the Juvenile Justice Information System, or JAGIS, which serves OYA and 34 counties. Administration comprises 8% of the budget and has 59 positions. It's organized into the Director's Office and Business Services. The Director's Office provides leadership, external and internal communication, and develops partnerships among the members of the juvenile justice system and other state and local agencies. Minority Services activities, which Mr. Jackson described last week, are also in the Director's Office. Business Services, which is 65% of the budget, provides centralized accounting, personnel, budgeting and contracting services for all regions, facilities, and programs, in addition to information technology. Therefore, you won't find accounting folks, budgeting folks, contracting folks in the regions or in the facilities. Those are all provided centrally in administration. On page 58, you can see that we also pay for a number of agency-wide services. 27% of the budget funds centralized payments for costs such as the Attorney General, insurances provided by risk management, Secretary of State's audits, and other centralized state government services. And in addition, limitation for grant funding is contained within this budget. As Mr. McGee mentioned in his overview, General Fund was added to this budget in the current service level to replace approximately $3.3 million in certificates of participation, which were used to fund the development of the Juvenile Justice Information System. In addition, on page 57, we have a program option package, which continues the provision of ongoing development and support for JGIS, its local partners, and other agencies who receive information from the system.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Trow.
Supplanting the COP monies, was there any consideration of perhaps expanding the COP operation again and using COPs to continue it rather than putting general fund into it?
Mr. Chair, if I may, Bill McGee from DAS. It would be...
Is this the debt service?
It would be inappropriate to continue to sell COPs for the operation of the system. It's appropriate to use the bill, but not to...
This is for the operation now. We need to general fund the operation.
There is no other revenue source that we have available to do that. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On page 59, we do have a program option package. This includes six positions and funding for contract services. The major emphases here are to continue four positions that we currently have and add two new positions. The emphasis of the package is for policy and procedure development, which, when you have a statewide system with numerous parties, is extremely important for consistency of understanding of data input and also consistency of reporting information. We also need to provide reporting strategies so that the partners can get the data out of the system in an easy and consistent manner. Currently, we have one permanent position to provide help desk support for the over 2,000 JGIS users, and we're using a temporary to assist in that. We would ask for a permanent position there. Also, we need assistance managing the technical infrastructure which underlies the JGIS application. And that's not just the technical infrastructure for the Oregon Youth Authority, but for the counties. Also, even though the system will be completed in June, ongoing development will be necessary to keep pace with changing requirements for reporting and other items within the juvenile justice system, and to keep JGIS abreast of new technologies and provide oversight, we're requesting funding for consulting.
Sure.
Senator Trow.
Where in this development of the JGIS system are we lagging, and where will we not have complete reporting, especially when you complete it? Will Multnomah County be outside of it still? Are they outside of it now?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, the Multnomah County has developed its own information system, although they have remained actively involved with JGIS as it's gone through its development, and we're planning to build an interface with them.
It's compatible. You can share information.
We're not there yet, but that is the plan. The ongoing development needs are to make sure that JGIS remains viable for the Youth Authority and the counties, so that its life goes, so that it remains usable for 15 to 20 years versus 5 years. If you don't keep a system up to date with the user's needs, they'll go around it and figure out ways to not use it. So it's a minimal kind of development that makes the system remain. It's sort of like Windows, and they keep putting out new versions of it. That's what we're talking about.
Now, Deschutes County, again, as well, is
Deschutes County has, since the hearing here last week, has told us that they will try to come online by the end of this biennium.
Let's see. So will the system then be complete with the exception of Multnomah County?
Complete in its initial development plans, yes. And then what we have is an ongoing system of maintenance and a small amount of ongoing development to make sure that it continues to meet the needs of the users as the field develops. The user needs change a little bit over time.
Senator Brown?
Thanks. A follow-up on Senator Tro's questions. See, I'm going to see how I phrase this. Once the Multnomah County system is interfaced with JGIS, will you be able to access all of the information from Multnomah County that you need or that you feel that you should have access to? That is the equivalent of them being on the system.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, as the interface is being discussed now, yes. Because the interface is just in the planning stages, I can't tell you that that's what it will end up to be.
But that's the plan.
That's the goal for the interface.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome. Please proceed.
Okay.
Before we leave JGIS, we should tell this committee that we did appear before the e-government committee, and that went very well.
Just to elaborate on that a little bit, the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee did recommend that this committee approve the budget as it pertains to information technology, including the policy option package. There were a couple of budget notes that they are recommending. One deals with this agency continuing to participate with other criminal justice agencies in trying to look at how you integrate all of the criminal justice agency information. And then the second budget note deals with OYA Public Web Server and looking at the feasibility of moving that to the DOS facilities, both to achieve potential efficiencies and to help improve security. So those are budget notes that as we get down to work session, you'll see the language for those.
Okay. Mr. Chair, continuing on page 60, the governor's recommended budget does have reduced levels for administrative services and supplies, particularly in the area of video and teleconferencing, which we are using now to reduce in-state travel. In addition, we will discontinue some of our expenditures on expendable property, and expenditures will also be reduced commensurate with decreases in workload caused by facility and program reductions. As Mr. McGee mentioned, a technical adjustment to this budget is requested to remove $2.1 million in other fund limitation for the portion of the JGIS COPs that was not backfilled by general fund, therefore leaving the budget on page 61 at $17 million in general fund and $18.9 million in total funds.
Sure.
Senator Crowe?
Are those reductions manageable reductions?
Chair, Senator Cho. Yes, they are. Although over the past 4 years, we have also made reductions in services and supplies within administration.
So there will be a squeeze, but it's still manageable.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cho, there will be some things that we don't do, but there will be other areas where we have created efficiencies.
Senator Brown, do you wish to be recognized?
I think I've got my question answered. Thank you,
all right.
Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Need to proceed?
Yes.
If there are no more questions on administration, let's move to our capital budgeting, and that's on page 62. I'd like to talk about two pieces of capital budgeting. And that is, first, we strive to maintain the assets that we have. And secondly, I do want to talk a little bit about our long-term capital construction plans. as Ms. Brazeau mentioned in her overview, we have sort of a dichotomy. We have new regional facilities and a couple of youth accountability camps, which were built after 1995 and are in excellent condition. We also have McLaren and Hillcrest Youth Correctional Facilities and four work study camps, which were built prior to 1995. As a matter of fact, between the years 1923 and 1979, and those need more work. On page 64, discuss our asset protection, and we have two basic areas that I'd like to talk about. The first is we have an active preventive maintenance program, and this was assisted in the last couple of years by the purchase and implementation of automated software, which is operational at all facilities except for our work-study camps. This assures that we know which items need to be reviewed and that we review those timely so that we continue the value in the properties and also protect our use of the facilities for programmatic reasons. The second asset protection emphasis that the agency has is in 1998, we contracted with a consultant to do a facility condition survey of our older facilities. The consultant identified over $7 million in necessary improvements to current assets to be done over a period of years. Using the consultant's input and also our own assessment of our properties, we've constructed a 6-year capital management plan, which begins on page 65 and goes through page 67. On page 65, you see the budget plan that is created within our 6-year capital management plan. The first thing that we do is designate about $400,000 of our base budget services and supplies in facilities for what we call asset protection projects. These are small projects that we do to hold the value of the asset. They're things that if we catch now will cost us less than either fixing them or replacing them later. The second thing that we have is a small capital improvement budget of about $600,000. We use that for somewhat larger items, but once again, most of the work that is done is concentrated at the older facilities where more deterioration has taken place. So in total, we have about $900,000 to spend in 2001-03 on asset protection and capital improvements. On page 68, you can see that of the capital improvement funding we have, $206,000 is general fund. The remainder is other funds, and at this point, that's limitation for which there is no guaranteed revenue.
Sure.
Senator Trow?
What is your anticipation of the revenue then for that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, at this time, we have no plans for how we will generate that revenue.
The other fund's revenue.
The other fund's revenue.
Plans, so there are no other fund source out there.
That's correct.
So, and this is in the budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, yes, it is.
What does DAS think about
that? Mr. Chair, at the time the governor's budget was prepared, the agency was discussing the possibility of selling some property on the McLaren site. At the time we understood that, that was still the likely source of that revenue. We have not addressed the issue of whether they will at some point be able to sell that property, or nor has the governor chosen to redirect any general fund in a revised budget to fill that.
But it remains in the budget, so just unidentified other funds that are going to possibly the sale will do
at
that.
At this time, it remains in the budget whether the agency will be able to sell the property in the future.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, just in my closing remarks on asset protection, I'd like to say, as with many state agencies that own property, there are numerous needs, and this budget addresses only a small portion of those. It does allow us to address critical items that we have on our list, and in some cases, some of these items may not be done if other emergencies develop and we have to divert funding to those emergencies to continue the operation of our programs. The next piece of capital that I'd like to talk about is capital construction. And I'm going to start on page 69. And while there's no funding in the budget for capital construction, there are two types of future needs that I want to mention. And the first one of these is tied to the bed forecast. If you remember, Karen Brazeau talked about fact that our budget is based on a forecast done by the Office of Economic Analysis of the operational capacity that we need in close custody facilities for youth. And the governor's recommended budget was based on the October 2000 forecast, and we now have the April 2001 forecast. While this shows what's occurring in 2001-03, that forecast is done for 10 years. So that we can see going out what our capital construction needs are, and because there's about a 15-month lead time for any new construction, we need to be projecting where our needs will occur. I've got a chart here of capital construction, and I also have a piece, the same piece for each of the members. Exact
Thanks.
Replica of this chart.
Thank you.
I just want to point out where we are now and where we would be going with the April forecast and then how that compares to the governor's recommended budget. Currently, we've got 1,181 physical beds that we can use. On July 1st, we'll lose 32 of those beds, which we lease in Multnomah County. So on July 1st, that's going to leave us with a capacity of 1,149 beds. That's basically this line if you extended it all the way across. That includes the youth accountability camps, work study camps, and our youth correctional facilities. If you look at the April forecast, you'll see that there's growth that goes above this 1149 line. And our first choice, and an option that we have available to us to meet capital needs, would be to remodel some space at Hillcrest Youth Correctional Facility in Scott Hall. And the remodeling of that space would give us an additional 50 beds for $1 million. That would then bring, at this point, our capacity to 1199. And if we were to extend that across, we would have enough capacity until sometime into the 2003 to 2005 biennium. Now, you see, what we have is new 25 beds, about 175 of those here, as we go out into close to 2010. This construction plan was based on the way the agency was set up when it built its regional facilities. Our regional facilities were built with room to expand. We can add 7 units to the properties that we have at our regional facilities. And they were designed so that we would add 25-bed pods. The utilities, all the basic structure of the regional facilities is there. We would just be able to add a pod, add another pod, and each pod would cost $1.4 million. So once we get Scott Hall remodeled, if there were needs for capital construction, and we were to choose to build, our choice would be to build at the regional facilities as was the plan when we designed them. They're all designed. They're designed the same. They're about 6,000 square feet. It's just sort of like adding another module onto what we already have. Now, if you look at the governor's recommended budget, you see we're well below the capacity that we currently have. And even by the end of this biennium, we don't reach our current capacity. However, sometime next biennium, we would start to go over that capacity, and it would be necessary probably to do this Scott Hall remodel. And based on subsequent forecast by the Office of Economic Analysis, we may need to start planning that remodel sometime late in this biennium. But this is the way that we plan for capital construction. It was the way that our newer facilities were built to allow expansion fairly cheaply. And we also have an opportunity to get some good bang for the buck by remodeling Scott Hall into a dorm-style fashion and giving us capacity for 50 years.
Question, Senator Trow?
A couple of questions. The 150-bed reduction, is the beds you're renting in Multnomah County?
No.
No?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we're actually leasing 32 beds in Multnomah County.
Okay.
We would give up that lease. That drops our physical capacity down to 1,149 beds.
Okay.
When we talk about 150-bed reduction, we're talking about the program funding for that, but we still have the facilities. So we will still have a facility for 50 youth in Tillamook, a facility for 50 youth in River Bend, and space for 50.
We're just going to have empty beds because we're not putting people in them. Is that it?
Mr. Chair, Senator Trow, we would have excess capacity based on the number of youth that we were funded to serve.
But people will be turned away from those beds because we can't afford to put people in them who need the beds.
Chair, Senator Trow, that's correct.
And what's happening to those people who are turned away?
Mr. Chair, what we're theorizing is some of those youth will remain in the communities being managed by the local juvenile departments. Some of them will continue to be committed to the youth authority, and they will come to us for shorter periods of stay, kind of the revolving door effect. Others may be given harsher sentences so that they're guaranteed a longer stay. We don't really, it's hard to guess what local judges and district attorneys will do, but that's what we're imagining.
Senator Brown?
Mr. Chair, thanks. Karen, would you agree with me that the governor's funding level, that the net of beds, that the net impact of it is a cap on the number of kids that we're serving through the Oregon Youth Authority?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, absolutely, it is a cap. I mean, we have a cap today. It's just that the cap that exists today has been adequate to meet the needs. In that very few counties have struggled to stay under the cap. With a 150-bed reduction, clearly counties will struggle to manage within that.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. Would you also agree with me that our failed juvenile policies of the 80s were the result of the cap that we had in McLaren, and that we did not have beds available for youth that either needed them or deserved them?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, in the public testimony that went on prior to you joining the committee, that was made pretty clear. And anybody in juvenile corrections always says what makes a difference is an empty bed, the threat of going.
Representative Hansen.
Yeah, I've got two questions. As I understand the six-year maintenance plan, in the next 2 years, you've got $400,000, but you've got about $1 million that you really see as urgent needs that you'd like to address in the next 2 years.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we have $400,000 within our facility services and supplies. We have an additional general fund amount in capital improvements of $206,000, and then other fund limitation, which we don't have revenue for. So we would have about $600,000 of actual money.
What I'm looking at on your six-year plan, there appears to be quite a few items that are somewhat relate to energy usage, HVAC systems, window replacements. Has this list been reevaluated in light of the increased energy costs that we're going to be looking at?
Senator Miller, Representative Hansen, we've not evaluated each of these with the Department of Energy, but we will do so.
I'm wondering, one, if there's a potential for financing of energy-related projects through utilities, especially if you've got some $400,000 that you could put with it. And then the other one to look at would be what $400,000 towards debt service of COPs would buy you on this list.
Senator Miller, Representative Hansen, we have in the past borrowed money from the Small Scale Energy Loan Program to provide us with some funding for projects, and I believe there is a bill which may expand the use of those funds, and we are looking to see if there are opportunities for us there.
Is there some way that those opportunities could be incorporated in this budget?
Senator Miller, Representative Hansen, we could look and see if that could be the case.
The other question is, as you closed the 32 beds in Multnomah County, and those are kind of special need detention beds, are you going to have to remodel space or spend money on space at McLaren or Hillcrest to get a similar type of intensive management unit?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hansen, we have no plans to do that. We have used that space for youth who have some pretty severe behavioral acting out problems, and manage them in most likely on the McLaren facility, but we have no plans right now to.
Like in a basic dormitory setting?
Yes, or we'll take advantage of some other single room space we have at McLaren. It's not nearly as new or modern or efficient as the space.
Thank you. Sure. Representative Canup.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Karen, you mentioned the county caps. What census data are we using to establish those close custody caps? Are those 99 or are those 2,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Canup, we distribute those beds based on a formula that's made up of half, 50% based on population data that we get from PSU, and half, 50% of the arrest rate. And so we use the most recent data available from both. And I can't off the top of my head tell you, we're lagging right now on the arrest data is what we're waiting for to update those.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Has the new census data, though, been incorporated into that at the 50% level that you're talking about?
Mr. Chair and Representative Canup, no, it has not, and we have not updated it at the request of the Juvenile Department directors. We update it, work very closely with them as an association when we update that. They have asked us to withhold or hold off on updating it and want to consider even kind of a rolling update that would maybe be a three-year rolling average that would avoid some of the what they consider for smaller counties, particularly radical changes for a small county can be two beds. So we have not updated it to reflect the new population figures, which are available though the new arrest data are not. We wait until we get both to update it and work out the timing with them. I know that counties who have seen the new population figures and see that they are going to would be winners under the new population figures are anxious for us to do that update. So we are meeting with the juvenile department directors later this month, and that will be a topic on the agenda.
I imagine Deschutes would be one of those.
I believe they would be.
Follow-up question.
Representative.
No. I'm looking at your map there, or your graph, about the increase or the need for new beds. And I know there's some controversy about some of the community programs that have been going on, but doesn't that argue for, if there are beds available in local communities, that instead of building a YA building 25 new beds onto their system, that we look at housing them in existing facilities that are around the state that may be not your regional facilities, but available in counties that counties have built for close custody?
Mr. Chair, Representative Canope, I think that is a good policy discussion to have, and have said to the counties, to this committee, and to Representative Williams Judiciary Committee, that I do believe that that is a sound public policy discussion. Is would it not make sense to look at perhaps in Multnomah County, where they do have a rather large detention facility that is underutilized at this point, rather than incur debt service to the state? Perhaps Multnomah County could develop, use 16 or 32 beds the way their particular facility is configured to run a community accountability program, rather than have the state construct more bed space. I think that's an option that we should look at. I think that's very different than considering it now, while the state continues to pay debt service on empty facilities.
Senator Trill?
Yeah, my question was somewhat similar to Representative Canope's question about Multnomah County, especially as I look at your plans for the future in terms of where you are going to be placing the new beds and so forth. It doesn't look like that we'll be doing much in Multnomah County, and I'm going to ask, is that because the county itself is doing a good job handling its population, so we don't need to do it there, or what?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, no. Our reason for showing this to you is really to show you that there is an agency plan for future growth that avoids siting and wholesale construction of brand new facilities from the ground up. That if we do,
there'll be enough beds in the Portland area, or simply we just move the kids to McLaren? Is that what we do from Portland?
Right now, Senator Trow, McLaren being the largest facility does take the overflow from smaller regional facilities where they cannot hold all of the kids from their region. So, for example, were we to build in the event we were to build another pod, say, at the Oak Creek facility in Albany, it's likely that that would free up space at McLaren and perhaps then house more kids from Multnomah. But I honestly do believe that we ought to look at other options before we enter into more state construction.
It's unclear to me, and maybe you can do this really briefly, but how does OYA adjust to the county juvenile programs? We have in Benton County a juvenile program headed by a pretty good person, and do they run the community part of what you do, or is there independent of what you do?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, it happens differently all over the state, and We mentioned in part of our presentation that we have agreements with actual written agreements with every county in the state in central and eastern Oregon. The counties over there, 18 counties, have formed a group called COJAC that you've heard about, central and eastern central and eastern juvenile justice coalition, I believe. And so we work together with them as a group. They have found that they need to work together, that they're all too small to work independently. And so we work with them as a group. But in other parts of the state, we work with every county. And Bob, could you put up the... and again, there's been this ongoing debate, and I think it exists in all of state social kinds of services, of whether the state should exist to fill in gaps in local services, or should be the services should be distributed evenly, i.e. Multnomah is viewed as a fairly well-funded, as is Lane County, a fairly well-funded juvenile justice system. So smaller counties, less well-resourced, would argue that the state should really give a larger proportion of its resources to those less resourced counties. The Multnomahs and Lanes of Oregon would say, but we have the toughest kids, so the state should help us more. But the state, given those relative arguments, does instead is try to distribute its resources proportionally, but not do necessarily the same exact work in every county. So we work with our primary partners, who are the juvenile department directors, but we put together written agreements in every county about how our services will mesh with their local services.
Isn't there a plan required in every county for juvenile programs or something?
There is a plan that's part of the Commission on Children's 0 to 18 plan, and then the juvenile justice, or the JCPAC that you heard about on Phil Lemon's Criminal Justice Commission, concentrates on the juvenile justice part of the plan, and we work with the juvenile department directors on that. But you're not going to find the youth authority doing exactly the same thing in every county. But generally, the services that we provide are for those kids whose crimes have risen to a level that they're not manageable by local juvenile departments, and the child requires or the youth requires an out-of-home placement. And because we can tap into federal funds, we manage the out-of-home placement component of that.
It's not the severity of the crime, or if it, you get all the felonies or something like that?
Well, it's not only the severity of the crime. It's typically those two things together, the severity of the crime and the need for out-of-home placement.
Thanks. Thank you. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
No problem. Proceed.
If you're ready, let's move to page 70. In addition to long-term capital needs, which are tied to the bed forecast, we also had identified in our facility condition survey the need to replace two structures. The first of those is the Whitaker Building on the McLaren campus in Woodburn, which was built in 1925. And it houses our administrative offices, plus a youth canteen and some other functions. It's the overall condition of the building is poor for its age. The third floor is abandoned. We don't use that anymore. The estimated cost of all the repairs was about 50% of the cost of replacing the building. And because of that, and the fact that it was originally built with a portion, at least the second floor, was a residence, so it's not built to common office space standards and is not as functional. We are looking at the replacement of that building in the future. And Mr. Chair, Representative Smith had asked if we could bring some pictures of that building, if it would be all right to
yes.
hand those out. Let me just give you a little explanation. This first book is a picture of a project that we did in the last couple of years to repair the side of the building. We had to go underneath the stucco. What we found was the wood was all rotted out, and we had to fix that. This other set of pictures that are going around is two views of the third floor of Whitaker Hall, which are abandoned. We don't use. One of them is a picture of the hallway. You can see a lot of deterioration. And the other is a picture of one of the rooms where you can see back into the beyond the wall into the studs. The replacement cost of that building would be about $2.3 to $2.6 million. And if we were to use certificates of participation, we did ask the Department of Administrative Services to give us an estimate of what the interest and the debt service would be on that. They're currently saying the interest would be at about 6%. And in the first biennium, the debt service would be about $470,000. That would rise in the second biennium and those through the next 8 years to about $730,000.
Representative Smith.
Are those fixed rates? No piece.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, yes, they are.
Who would have to do this repair? I mean, is this something that some of those folks who are staying with you could participate in?
Senator Miller, there are certain things that we could use youth to do, but in many cases, what we're looking at is a major reconstruction of a certain part of the building, mm-hmm. or major replacement of systems such as plumbing or heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. In those cases, we would probably need various contractors to do those. So I would say there's a small portion of things that the actual youth would be able to do from a technical expertise perspective.
Have you considered that, or is that, do you do that at all in ongoing maintenance, or?
Senator Miller, currently? Yes, we do. We have a number of offenders who work along with our trades folks around the campus doing various maintenance activities.
And the youth, Mr. Chair, did help in the construction of the soft-sided structures that are out there? So they have done a lot of the maintenance, and they did help with the construction of the soft-sided structures. I'm not sure it would be an interesting contract to try to let. I mean, I'd be willing to try it to see if we could get a contractor who would use the kids on the work crew.
Yeah, I understand the part that's a little more complex than painting the side of a wall or something, but
be fun to try, though.
Yeah, I mean, might be of benefit on the cost side as well as giving them some skill.
I think when we did the soft-sided structures that the contractor actually hired some of the kids when they got out as on the ongoing crews.
Representative Smith, more on your favorite third floor.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Are you on the third floor here?
No, second floor.
Oh, fine.
Second floor. Would it be possible to find out what the cost of those dollars would be if it was 7% and 7.5%?
Senator Miller, Representative Smith, yes, we can have the Department of Administrative Services run a number of different scenarios. For example, we could also, they advise that they would probably be looking at a COP with a 10-year term, but we could.
Is it possible to lengthen those terms to a longer length of the life of the asset?
We can ask the Department of Service of Administrative Services to estimate that, and also what the possibilities are of successfully selling COPs for those.
As an advocate of the taxpayers in the state of Oregon, I think one of the things we as a body forget is that we need to take into consideration the cost of the investment of financing when rates are low versus when rates are higher. And so I just wanted to know what the cost would be if we financed this at a higher rate of interest than today's rates.
Senator Miller, Representative Smith, will get that for you.
Always watching out for the taxpayer.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Trowell.
Is there room at McLaren to just simply have new facilities, some pods or whatever, rather than spending all this money on Whitaker Building, which you, I wonder if, what you have when you get done? Do you understand what I'm saying?
You have the acreage on which to construct some new buildings as opposed to trying to refurbish and reconstruct this ancient thing?
Senator Miller, Representative, or Senator Trowell, one of the plans that we've, the answer to your question is yes. And one of the plans that we've had for a replacement for Whitaker Hall would be to site the building right on the security fence so that, because right now Whitaker Hall is quite a ways within the secure perimeter. So if people want to come there for administrative reasons, they have to get within that perimeter. If we were to site the building such that it bisected the fence, we could then perhaps use it also as a place for visitors to come and for other people who had no need to be inside the secure perimeter but were there for just an administrative reason. So we do have space, and I think we could make better use of a replacement building in terms of the functions we housed in it if it were located in a different place on the campus.
That'd be tremendously more expensive than refurbishing an old building.
Chair and Senator Trowell, the contractors that we had to look at the building said that the cost of refurbishing the building, basically when I say refurbishing, just remediating all the things they found were wrong, not adding to the functionality, would be 40% to 50% of the new cost, or the cost of a new facility.
So that's it.
Also on page 70, we discuss another building that we have that we feel needs replacement, and that was corroborated by our physical condition survey. Corvallis House, which houses our young women's transition program near Oregon State University, is a three-story residence, also has a basement. It's about 10,000 square feet. The structure's condition is rated as below average for its age and use. There were 16 deficiencies identified with a total cost to repair of about $500,000. That's approximately 40% of the replacement cost of that facility. And to us, it raises questions about whether it is a good investment of the state's money to repair the facility or to replace it in the future.
When did you acquire that Corvallis House?
Senator Miller.
Mr. Jester, sitting behind me, says 1980.
Looks like an old fraternity or sorority house. Is that what it was?
It was.
It was. Senator Miller, we're unclear about when it was built, so we're unclear how old it actually is.
Fraternity house. And they CSD put a program there for men, or young boys, young men, at one point. I think that's the first state use of it.
Now they're playing for the Beavers.
No.
I shouldn't. Yeah. Nice quarterback there yesterday.
Yes, Representative Hanson. To understand the 40% replacement cost, would that be replacement cost if you go out and purchase another lot and build a replacement building, and then you'd have Corvallis House to sell? Or is that like replacing it on the same, tearing this down and replacing it at the same site? How do?
Senator Miller, Representative Hanson, that's actually the cost of the structure itself. So there is not an assumption in there about whether we would use the lot that we currently have. Since we did a demolition, that would cost more, but then we would be on the land that we have and in the area that we have. If we were to use another piece of land, we would have to purchase that, but then we would have this structure to sell.
Is there much of a market for a house like this? I mean, other than fraternities, sororities? That's a,
I don't know for
a
that
big
one.
Place.
Yeah, that one is. It's on a corner location, fairly close to downtown. So it's The location, I think, is valuable, whether the building is anymore. The property is quite expensive in Corvallis.
I'm wondering if it makes sense to sell this asset and take the proceeds and build something useful. Is that in your contemplating that or not? Or,
Mr. Chair, we hadn't really given that any thought. We're quite torn about this place because it's a great location for its purpose.
Close to Research Stadium.
It puts the young women.
That's really not close.
In
Corvallis.
No, it's just it's in a neighborhood. It puts the young women within walking distance of jobs and school and all it's kinds of places. That works really well for its purpose, even though the building. It's a beautiful building from the outside. It's just falling down on the inside. So we keep saying we need to do something, but we never quite figure out what to do, quite honestly.
Representative Hansen.
I would imagine you're very excited about entering into another siting process.
That would be the other reason that we haven't considered selling it.
Okay, other questions? Thank you. Proceed.
Okay, I'm going to move to page 74. We talked a little bit about debt service. I just like to recap our current debt service. We use certificates of participation for, we'll say, three different activities. The first was we financed the construction of our five secure regional youth correctional facilities. Secondly, we made improvements to Hillcrest and McLaren. And third, as we talked about before, we financed the development of the juvenile justice information system. We do, in this budget, have an amount for debt service of $13 million, which is all general fund. And there's a schedule on page 75 of the repayments, and you'll see we will make our last payment on those certificates of participation in April 1st of 2012.
Chair.
Senator Trowell.
Assuming that you don't use many more COPs, will this payment amount, is it the $13 million that we pay this time in the budget?
Yes.
Will that amount stay constant in budgets down the road or get bigger or what?
Senator Miller, Senator Trowell, if we don't sell any more COPs, that amount will begin to be less because we had some improvements that were made where the COPs had a shorter time period. Generally, if you are remodeling or making improvements to a current structure, the life of the COP is not as long because the life of the improvement may not be as long. The longest COPs that we have are for the regional facilities that we built. We're expected to have a fairly long life.
Mr. Chair, one of the things we're doing more and more in state government is debt financing. And, this is a budget that shows that.
Absolutely.
If you have any more questions, that completes what I've got.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your testimony. And now for the big wrap-up. Karen.
It's quite a setup. thank you for your attention for the last few days. I will make my remarks as brief as I can. I know that this budget is troubling for many people in the building and on this committee. I will start out by telling you it's troubling to me as well. I know that one of the things that you all are grappling with are probably the cost per day for providing services to youth. The underlying reason it's expensive really has to do with how this agency was developed in Senate Bill 1 and the mission we were given and the plan that was structured for juvenile justice in the state. And I have tried to figure out how to lower the cost per day. We even look at the food costs, and we have driven food costs to the meals for teenagers, which, I mean, you know how they eat. And we have looked at the average the food costs across our facilities and driven those costs to the lowest costs, knowing that if a facility has figured out how to feed the kids cheaper and stay within the USDA requirements of imposed on us by the school lunch program, which reimburses us, then we'll learn from that and drive the others to the lower cost. But the true costs are really in what is called the housing and the treatment costs. We have a shift staffing pattern, to remind you, that has one, we serve the kids in 25 bed units, very different from the adult system. We have one adult on the midnight shift with the youth. We have two on the day shift, and we have three on in the evening shift. And they're not there to guard the kids. They're there to interact with the kids, to raise them, to work on all of their treatment issues. They don't just go to counseling with a therapist and then it's over. They live in that milieu 24 hours a day. They're kids. You don't get that by housing them in 100-bed units with one person standing over them, ordering them to assess themselves in their mental health and then give themselves drug treatment. I mean, that's where the expense is. And the state could choose to do something else. It would require statutory changes to do something else, and the state would be vulnerable to lawsuits, as has happened all over the country. I don't think we're running a Cadillac program. I think we're running a program that meets the requirements of the treatment needs for youth in facilities. So I honestly don't know how to make it any cheaper. And I know that you're struggling with the cost per day on that. In terms of the administration, there were some comments in the last few days about the administration. I want to talk about that as an agency. We are fairly new, and when Senate Bill 1 was passed in 95, we didn't become an agency until January of 96. That's when I joined the agency. Prior to that, I was with the Department of Education. Between the passage of Senate Bill 1 and the agency becoming standing alone in January of 96, there was a lot of work done with what was then the CSD and is now SCF. And some people still call it the divorce. And here's kind of the deal that was struck, is the agency didn't leave with a lot of administrative staff. And one of the deals was they didn't leave with staff, with any staff who automatically got to go with this new agency. Everybody who came had to apply for a job. That means that the agency was established with fewer positions than it would have liked, but it didn't automatically take people with it. Mr. Hill, who was the first director, applied for his job. Everybody applied for their jobs. I applied for and competed with 27 people who wanted to be the deputy at that time. So we started with a lean group of people who wanted to start a new agency and had vast amounts of enthusiasm to try to do things differently in state government, and it sounds very hokey, but it's true. I mean, it's just true. People were really happy to go to work, and it has been really fun, and we'll probably screw it up, but we haven't yet. I mean, over time, we have a lot of opportunity to do that. And we were very committed and remain committed to focus on what we believe is our real and only purpose for being, and that's to provide the services to the kids. So we determined early on that we wanted to set up a structure that was regionally based, that kept the focus on the kids out in the regions and in the communities who came from the communities and would go back to the communities, and have a central administration that was lean, and we call ourselves not central administration and central support, and we try to remind ourselves and tell the people that are doing the real work out in the regions to remind us that we are there to support them. We don't exist just because Salem is somehow incredibly important. So we're pretty lean, but we like it that way. And we have taken administrative cuts. Ms. Olson talked about the cuts we've taken. Even though we started lean, over the every session since we've existed, we've taken administrative cuts. In the governor's recommended budget, there's administration associated with all of the youth the accountability camps. All of the administration associated with those camps is eliminated with those camps. Mary Botkin talked about the parole and probation staff. We have a supervisory ratio with those folks of 1 to 12. We have eliminated a supervisory position with the elimination of those positions. We have across the agency a span of control that averages 1 to 10. So we have taken the administrative cuts that correspond with the programmatic cuts. And I'm happy to talk to you more about that in any kind of length you want to get into. But I felt it was important to go on the record about the corresponding administrative cuts that we've taken in this budget. We would also like them to be restored if there are programs that are restored. I want to switch and end on what I think are more positive notes. We're an agency that really has paid attention to the outcomes. In the short period of time of our existence, I think we have concrete outcomes, literally concrete outcomes. We doubled in size in the first, literally doubled in size in the number of kids that we serve, the number of staff that we've managed in the first 3 years of our existence. We built simultaneously constructed around the state 5 new regional correctional facilities without a lot of fanfare, without a lot of problems. Moved kids into those facilities, geared up, hired staff, trained staff, got things underway. You didn't hear a lot about it. It went well. We planned, developed, built and implemented the juvenile justice information system that is up and running, single database, missing 2 counties, but we have today running 24-hour-a-day for 34 counties, an information system that didn't make the front pages. It's my single and primary goal. So you didn't hear much about it. Was on budget and on time and just went along. We have paid attention to our benchmarks. We've been audited, I can't even tell you how many times. at least once or twice a year. We have the outgoing director's audit is soon to be published and made public, and the finding in that is that we underpaid Director Hill $30 on one of his travel claims. I won't read that in the paper. Partnerships, I think you heard about that in the testimony. I think it's rare to see the unions, Crime Victims United, the Juvenile Rights Project, who usually are the people suing Juvenile Justice Agency, parents. We didn't solicit. The people that we invited to provide testimony were some of the youth that you heard. Those were the only ones. Counties, contractors, with a single exception. We formed very strong partnerships because we do listen to all sides of an issue and try to find a place that's somewhere in the middle that makes sense. We are meeting our legislative mission. We're paying attention to what matters. So I guess what I'm asking of this committee is, if this agency's budget needs to take cuts, and it very well might need to do that because of overall constraints in the budget, we can do that. Life goes on. We'll manage with what we're given. We are good managers. Please don't try to fix us. We're not an agency that's broken. So please don't try to make cuts to try to fix something that's not broken. But if we need to make cuts, we'll handle them and manage them. That's what we do.
Sure.
Senator Trow.
There's a great admiration for the agency, and so nobody's criticizing the agency, but there's concern about the financing in this budget for the agency, and some desire to see some of the programs that are being cut maintained. And do you have, in case we could find some additional money? I don't know that we can. We probably cannot, but maybe we can find some additional money, where that money should go into programs. Any suggestions about that?